Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. Coming from California, here's Aaron Alvarado and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. Aaron Alvarado, it's the post-Thanksgiving pod. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm actually hungover on pumpkin pie. It's incredible how much pumpkin pie I ate over the past 3 days.
My trick with the pumpkin pie was I sliced a very tiny piece and I ate it, starting with the crust, by the way. I ate crust first, worked my way to the point.
I'm starting to petition next year. Just give me the crust. Put a little pumpkin spice seasoning on that crust and I'll be happy.
The thing was, so I did this tiny slice. By the way, I ended up going back for 4 more tiny slices. So I should have just gone with a big slice.
So you had your own pie. Well, you sent me photos. It looks like you had quite the party at your new abode.
Yes, we hosted. So we have our new home, and we thought let's have the both sides of the parents. Also, Lindsay's sister and her husband and 2 kids came.
The two sides stopped feuding for one day.
Well, yes.
They had a truce for one day for Thanksgiving.
It's like the two families from Romeo and Juliet. We broke bread for one night. I was about to say their names, and I was going to say the Corleones, and then I realized that would have been a fatal mistake.
No, that's the family from Green Book, actually.
Oh, I can't wait to talk Green Book. Aaron, there have been so many movies that have come out. An insane number of movies. Have you seen any of them? How many?
I've only seen a couple. It's an uncomfortable amount of movies that they've released recently.
It's a lot.
What I understand, you've seen quite a few, though.
So I've been on a tear. Yeah. Which, by the way, it turns out that the post movie pass tear is an expensive one.
Oh yeah.
Oh, it is. I finally canceled my movie pass. Even though we literally did a eulogy of MoviePass like 3 months ago.
We sure did.
I finally canceled because I was holding out because their e-ticketing theaters, the ones that they had partnerships with, they were the only those theaters where they allow you to see any movie. They weren't putting on any restriction. And one of those few e-ticketing theaters in the entire Sacramento area, the only one was literally going to be a quarter mile from our new house. So I was waiting to move in. I'm walking distance to an e-ticketing theater. So basically I can use MoviePass as I'd always used it, as intended. And sure enough, 2 days, my friend, 2 days after moving in, they removed that theater from e-ticketing. I was like, oh, okay, perfect. Awesome. Terrific.
So you're officially a non-MoviePass member, like Skylar and I.
Just like you and Skylar. The difference is you guys had AMC Stubs to fall back on, and there are no AMCs in Sacramento.
AMC Stubs is the superior product to MoviePass. I'll tell you that right now. It's more expensive, but it is the superior product by far.
Well,
because not only do you get the 3 movies a week for $20 a month, you get to use the app and pick your seat beforehand, which is so convenient. On top of it, my favorite feature of all, when you go into the AMC, they have 2 different lines for the snack bar. One for the Stubbs members, which is much shorter, and then one for the commoners.
Wait, they treat AMC Stubbs members like they're Hilton Honors members?
They absolutely do, my friend. Gosh. And on top of that, you can't just stand in line and say, "Oh yeah, I'm a member." They check your card before you can purchase.
This is the opposite of MoviePass. I feel like they had a distinct line for MoviePass that was longer. Like it was like
Exactly, to try to dissuade you. But no, with AMC Stubs, you're treated like a king. I love it. I love my Stubs membership. Oh.
Well, you did until you took your, I think you took your mom to go see Green Book.
I sure did.
And it told you it was going to be reserved seating.
So all those great things I said about AMC Stubs did not apply to the AMC near my mom's house. So we had to just line up like regular folks on Black Friday. To try to get in our movie. Thankfully, we saw Green Book and it wasn't crowded at all, so we got prime seating.
That's good.
But had she wanted to see Wreck-It Ralph 2, we would have been screwed.
Oh, no doubt.
Because there was a line around the theater for that movie.
Of course there was. It won the weekend.
Yeah.
What was the box office haul?
$55 million.
Wow.
$55 million for Wreck-It Ralph.
Second highest ever for Thanksgiving weekend, right?
Incredible. Yeah. I never made it through the first Wreck-It Ralph. I didn't. I turned it off like 20 minutes in.
Okay.
Should I go see the sequel? Should I skip the first one and see the sequel?
So that's what I'm here to tell you. I'm here to talk about it because
please be my guide.
I want to go through some hits and misses here because these are a lot of movies, and I don't want people to waste their money.
Before we get into that, can we talk about our comments that are popping up right now on Facebook?
Yeah, I was gonna draw attention to these. We're getting a ton of comments. I'm really loving it. Just shout out to Munarfa Fahira, who's letting us know where to watch Creed 2 and Robin Hood, by the way.
Yes.
One of those is a hit. One of those is a miss. I'll tell you. Stay tuned. And I'll tell you which one. Shout out to Mariana Wahlberga, not to be confused with the Wahlberg family of Marky Mark. And,
the famous Wahlberg sister.
She also has a link in the comments to Creed 2 and Robin Hood. Once again, Anissa Muliandro, same movies. By the way, why Creed 2 and Robin Hood? Like, so do we not have any links to Green? We got Tasia Amalia. She looks like a very nice individual in the photo. Mm-hmm. And she, once again, she's providing a link to go watch Creed 2.
So helpful.
Full movie, not SD. It says full movie online HD 1080p. So if you want, you can follow those links. And
unfortunately, we can't endorse a 1080p link. We are a 4K podcast.
We are a 4K podcast.
So unless you have a link for a 4K copy of Dr. Seuss The Grinch 2018, stay out of our comments.
So, yeah. Stay out of our comments, and you can slide into Aaron's DMs.
So, 4K, I'm accepting all DMs if you have 4K links.
This is what happens when I make our videos, our Facebook Live videos, public. It allows any bot to comment on them, and so we have the freaking entire country of Mother Russia commenting.
Are we sure those are bots?
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not sure. One of these people I got to know pretty well. They told me who to vote for in the midterms. And I listened. I voted for entirely who they said to vote for.
The thing is, you told them you were on the fence. So they really swayed your vote, which is, it's so helpful.
How many people do you honestly think, do you believe there is such thing, by the way, as people that are sitting that are on the fence?
No, I don't. There's only one person, that guy, the weirdo with the sweater on town hall. Yes. What was that guy's name?
Yes, I don't remember. Oh, gosh. He had a perfect name, too.
He was a mustachioed weird man.
Yeah.
And he claimed he was undecided in one of the town hall meetings.
Yeah. His name was Ken Bone. In the lead up to 2016.
That's it. Ken Bone. He is literally the only one.
Still undecided, by the way.
Actually, he's not. He has, if you go to his Twitter feed, of course. He is decided.
Oh, is he is he?
Yeah.
Is he a supporter of our current commander in chief?
Oh, he is. He's full throttle behind he respects the position of the presidency.
Look, if CNN calls me up and I have an opportunity to get in a room with six other people and be this panel of undecided voters that they turn to after any presidential debate, brother, I am undecided. If that's what I have to say to get in that room, I'm going in.
You need that FaceTime.
That FaceTime. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'll be wearing my Brave Little Podcast shirt, and I'll be like, I don't know. I don't know if I go with one person and go with anarchy or go with someone else that has experience. I don't know. I'm undecided.
It's such a hard decision.
Hard.
I got to go with my heart on this one.
Yeah.
I vote for the Brave Little Podcast.
Oh, I would. Yeah. No, if I can get on, if I get FaceTime, I'm absolutely.
What do you mean if? We're going to get you on.
Yeah.
No, 2020.
We'll get on there. I mean, how hard is it for a white male to get in front of a television camera? Not hard. a young white millennial male. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Speaking of young white millennial males, Viggo Mortensen in Green Book. Yes. Not young, but the white male applies. We're going to be talking about him and his performance in depth, as well as Mahershala Ali. So for those tuning in, we're going to go through some hits and misses of the Thanksgiving haul of films that came out. I'm going to rifle through those pretty quickly, And then we're going to focus a majority of this conversation around Green Book. And so if you want to hear about Green Book, stay tuned. That's the one we'll probably go the most in-depth on. Is that fair to say?
I think that's fair to say, but you should probably list like what you've personally seen, because I interrupted you. I apologize for that.
No, you're fine. So Green Book, of course. I saw Widows, the Steve McQueen film with Viola Davis in lead. I saw Creed 2, the follow-up to what I would consider a masterpiece in Creed 1. I mean, it, like, maybe, I was ranking...
Yeah, it's one of the top three boxing movies of all time.
Oh, I'd no, say. It is. I was ranking the Rocky films, and I have it number two. Creed is the second best Rocky film after the original Rocky. I don't think there's any question. Now, where does Creed 2 fit into that list? I'll let you know. I actually sent a tweet about it. So if those that follow me on Twitter.
At give a screenshot of that, of that tweet.
I was going to say, I was going to pull up that tweet just so I can recall what my opinion was.
You're like, just so I can remain consistent. Let me. No,
because if I were to list them right now, it would just absolutely be different.
Let me check those receipts.
Yes, I got to filter through all of my deleted tweets about BYU beating Utah.
retracted.
Yeah. So anyway, Creed 2 I saw. I saw Ralph Breaks the Internet, even though the movie should have been called Ralph Wrecks the Internet, but that's okay.
Ooh.
But yeah, it's got some spice on that one. That's the follow-up to Wreck-It Ralph, the movie that you only watched 15 minutes of, I think.
20.
Oh, 20. Okay.
To be generous.
Okay. Yeah. Then I saw The Front Runner, starring Hugh Jackman. This is a Jason Reitman film, son of Ivan, or Yvonne. And that's a true story about Gary Hart as 1988 run for president. And then I saw A Private War, which is a film, I believe it's the feature directorial debut for Chris Heineman, who did a documentary that was in both of our top tens last year called City of Ghosts, which you can watch now on Amazon Prime, about this war in Syria and these kind of the homegrown journalists there that are trying to save their city of Raqqa. Raqqa, Syria. And anyway, he took that experience covering this conflict in Syria and made a feature-length film about someone I consider a hero. I think, again, it's his first narrative film, I want to say. I don't know. You might know more about this, Aaron, than
yeah, as far as I understand, it is his first narrative. He had two big documentaries. He had Cartel Land.
Oh, Cartel Land.
On Netflix.
That's
right. It's incredible. It's one of my favorite documentaries of the last little while. And then he had City of Ghosts.
That's right.
And so this was, after those two first efforts, someone said, all right, let's have you take a crack at a dramatic feature-length film.
Which is about Marie Colvin, who you're familiar with.
I am?
I don't know.
I haven't seen the movie yet. So
you haven't seen the movie, but you have sent me many, many links to Marie Colvin's work through the years.
This is true. Yeah.
And she's a big fan of hers over at The Intercept. And so, yes, we'll talk a little bit more about that. But anyway, A Private War I saw. So, yeah, A Private War, The Front Runner, Wreck-It Ralph, Creed 2, Widows, Green Book. That's a lot of movies. Am I missing any there? I might be missing one.
I think that covers just about everything. Did you see Instant Family yet?
No. And you know what's funny is that is the one that my wife really wants to see.
Okay.
Yeah.
So once again, you're disappointing your wife.
I am.
Way to be a great husband.
Yeah. It's fun. Of all those movies, I mean, she only went to, she went to two of those with me. She went to Green Book and Wreck-It Ralph. And so, the rest of them, which wasn't super interested in, but I need to take her to see Instant Family.
We did see Fantastic Beasts as well.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So Fantastic Beasts and, and The Crimes of Grindelwald, also known as The Crimes of Johnny Depp, which are numerous. what's interesting is I have a lot to say about that. I actually reached out to our friend of the pod. He's guest hosted a couple of episodes with us, Shannon Williams, who is a Potterhead, and she has got some spice, some hot takes. I'm hoping this week to get her on so we can talk about it, because you and I both saw it. I feel like we're probably not super qualified to speak to with authority about Potter films. I will ask, though, your wife loves the Potterverse. She's a Potterhead herself.
Absolutely.
I'd love to know what her take was. even though we'll be doing an episode with Shannon shortly.
We can go into it later, but I'll just say, like, right off the bat, she didn't like it.
Ooh.
She was disappointed, so. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, so, yeah.
I don't know what Shannon's take's going to be, but I will say, I haven't met a lot of people who loved it.
So, I wish we knew someone that did love it.
Oh, you know what? It feels like a movie that Skylar would love. yeah. No, he didn't like it. He told us in our text thread. Our very contentious text thread, by the way.
Oh yeah, it's epic now, to say the least. I wish we could like just post screen the best parts of it. We should do like a highlight package once a week. I think it's deserving of it personally.
Yeah. Well, let's rifle through these real quick. I mean, A Private War, the Marie Colvin biopic, kind of. Basically, this is a woman, a journalist. She was an American journalist that wrote for a British paper, the Sunday Times. She was famous for going in the middle of combat war zones. I mean, actually, she was, some would say, even reckless, because she wouldn't actually follow the rules of like where journalists were allowed to go, because her whole philosophy was journalists need to go to the places they're not allowed to go to tell the stories that no one's hearing, right? Like the real story is happening where the journalists aren't allowed to go. And that philosophy proved true. Her work speaks for itself. I mean, it really remarkable career. She died in Syria, where she was targeted by Assad's regime. They knew where she was in the specific building, and they ended up killing her. This movie is kind of a lead up through her life, up to that moment and how that happened. And it's a pretty remarkable movie. So when we're talking about hits and misses, it's a hit for me. Okay. It's right in my wheelhouse, though. The director we talked about, Matthew Heineman, it's incredible to see this performance from Rosamund Pike, a British actress playing an American. Apparently, we don't have enough American actresses, but I'm not going to drag her for it, because Rosamund did an excellent job here. And you've got supporting performances from Jamie Dornan and Stanley Tucci, who are both excellent in the movie. And sprinkled a little Stanley Tucci in there. But Jamie Dornan plays the photographer that follows her that actually survived the blast that killed Marie. This is no spoiler alert. I think it's probably worth reading Wikipedia even a little bit about Marie before going to the film, because I actually think that going in with context adds to it. But it's not a happy story, but it's an important one, both because this is a journalist that actually is trying to shed light and give voice to people that had no voice whatsoever, and were being targeted and killed by their own government, innocent people and civilians. And so she even has this interview with Anderson Cooper live on the air mere hours before she ends up dying, which is that scene's pretty incredible.
Who plays Anderson Cooper in the movie?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. John Slattery from Mad Men.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I thought it was a good casting, though. Yeah. What's cool is they do play. I mean, it's just like the original interview that they play, which is actually pretty cool.
Wow.
But yeah,
Private War. Love when they do that. I really enjoy when they do that.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the movie Gaudi that came out with John Travolta over the summer.
Yes.
Where they went back and they did not use the actual footage.
Why not? Yeah.
They recreated it for some reason, and it was terrible.
Yeah. Well,
one of the many things that went wrong in that movie. But I think I'm excited to see that movie. It's unfortunately it's just not playing anywhere around here.
No.
A Private War. So if it's near you, I would say check it out, even though I haven't seen it yet, but I definitely want to see it. And it's really cool. Like, we don't really do interviews on this podcast, but I would love, there's one guy that I'd love to have on this podcast to talk to and just like pick his brain, is Matthew Heineman.
Oh,
I think he's one of the most interesting young filmmakers right now.
Yeah.
And I'd love to just get a chance to sit down with that guy and just see where his head at and what he's doing, what he wants to do in the future, because I think the sky's the limit for that guy. He's so incredibly talented.
Totally agree. Next is The Front Runner. It's the Hugh Jackman. And once again, based on a true story about the 1988 election. I didn't know anything about this. I mean, I was way too young to remember, one year old. Mm-hmm. But Gary Hart, who was apparently the front runner in the election, which would have been going up against George H.W. Bush, I believe.
Yes.
He was the front runner of the Democratic side that eventually went to Mondale. But this was kind of the birth of the kind of digging into the private lives of politicians, and especially presidential candidates, as the man who had an affair with his, with a woman, cheated on his wife. it was a huge story that torpedoed his campaign, that he suspended his campaign and he tried to get back into it and whatnot. But the story here is that this was the beginning of when politicians' private lives began to matter to the public. The movie itself is about as boring as politics pre-1988. It is so boring. I don't know why Jason Reitman wanted to tell this story. It's not interesting. It's made poorly. You've got J.K. Simmons in there, who seems to be the only one that's trying. I will shout out to Bill Burr, the comedian.
Oh, Bill Burr's in it.
Yes, yeah. He plays a journalist for the Miami Herald, and he's playing Bill Burr, which is just a great character.
Great.
Yeah. Like, there's a scene where, like, he's in the newsroom and where they're supposed to be deciding what stories to write, and he's just holding court with these bits where I almost feel like it was just B-roll that he didn't know was B-roll. You know, like, he's just, like, doing comedy.
Hold on to that thought, because when we talk about Green Book, I want to touch on that. It's something similar in that movie as well.
Oh, great.
So.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. So, But
with that, with the story for the Gary Hart stuff, I wonder if Jason Reitman wanted to do it just because everything is so political right now that he felt like this was his chance to jump on that bandwagon basically and make this story that he felt was probably poignant. I guess I don't know.
I think he felt like it was the right time because everything about the movie feels rushed. It feels really like half baked, and also like. I found myself getting kind of nauseous in the film just because of how much media we get right now and political coverage anyway. So like watching a movie about the explosion of it, right? Like where it started, I was like, oh, I don't want more of this right now. I'm not interested in this. Not to mention that Hugh Jackman's got a hairpiece that is like Saturday Night Live. It's like falling off in half the scenes. You're like, okay, just give him the Wolverine chops. It doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
Like, so funny. Anyway. That's a miss.
The question, would you have voted for Gary Hart?
No. No, dude was a liar, but I guess they all are. Anyway, no.
That's a hot take for you right
there.
I would
have voted for Hugh Jackman, but not Gary Hart. moving on to Wreck-It Ralph, or Ralph Breaks the Internet. If we're gonna go hit or miss, I'll say it's a hit. It certainly was a hit with the audience. The $55 million haul speaks for itself. It's been a hit critically. It's a serviceable sequel. It's what you would expect with a sequel to a beloved film, where like the sequel is serviceable. It's good. It's got good scenes. It's more of the same. It introduces a couple of new things. It has this scene and a couple of sequences with Disney princesses that are pretty funny. And some might find interesting. Others might not.
Would I find it interesting?
No, you would hate this movie so much. This would be such a big miss for you. I can't even tell you how big of a miss. This is a bigger miss than The Front Runner for you. So if you are of Aaron's cloth, do not see this film. It is a miss. But if you enjoyed the first Wreck-It Ralph, you'll probably enjoy this one. It is not better. Not one part of it is better. But Wreck-It Ralph is, you know, kind of highly esteemed. So anyway, I still call it a hit. But yeah.
John C. Reilly. I love John C. Reilly's voice acting.
Yeah.
And I would watch it just for that.
Yeah, he's good. He's good.
Yeah, he's awesome. I love. Yeah. So if you ever get a chance, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is one of my favorite novels. He does. He reads the audiobook, and it's incredible. I mean, it's so entertaining to hear him do an audiobook, to see him work in that medium. So yeah. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, the audiobook read by John C. Reilly.
Okay, good to know. So in the same vein of sequels that are hits but aren't as good as their predecessor, Creed 2. I could almost give the exact same take. It is in no way better than Creed 1. However, it is not an abomination. It is not, you know, it's fared well with critics. It fared well with audiences. It was number 2 of the weekend and made quite a bit more than the first Creed. The first Creed was so surprisingly good for me that I knew going in, I was like, I can't expect this to, you know, you just can't expect it to do what the first Creed, just the element of surprise was so on their side to come up with this fresh angle that was like, oh, I didn't realize that there was any life left in this franchise. But clearly, I mean, Creed was so excellent. Creed 2 is more of the same. If you liked Creed, you're going to like Creed 2. It's not better in any way. Is it better? But it's definitely close enough that it's a serviceable sequel. That's probably as much as I'll say about Creed 2.
Well, my question would be, like, what are the highlights of it?
The highlights of it is that you get to see Dolph Lundgren do Dolph Lundgren. Like, he is the highlight of this movie.
That's a selling point for me.
I haven't seen Dolph Lundgren in a movie, and I don't know how long, and he is clearly committed. Like, it's almost as if he's felt like every attack on Ivan Drago has been personal to him, and that he's been waiting to be able to have this, like, moment of kind of reconciliation. And mm-hmm. and he gets that here. He is excellent. He's the
awesome.
He is the best actor in this movie. I mean,
wow.
He is the best actor. Like, Sly does Sly. Michael B. Jordan is Michael B. Jordan, and he's great. But Ivan Drago is like, there's this pain beneath the eyes about how, like, Russia basically turned, like, I don't want to say too much about the storyline there. It's certainly the most interesting of all the storylines going on in Creed 2. But basically, Russia kicked him out. They turned, like, the ruling class of Russia turned their back on him when he lost. Back in Rocky IV, and he's got he's feeling some of that pain still, and he's training, of course, his son, who's that's the big fight is his son against MBJ. So that's where it's worth seeing for the Ivan Drago Dolph Lundgren storyline for sure.
Very cool.
Yeah. And then Widows, I need you to see Widows. I would love to hear what you think. This is Viola Davis, Michelle Rodriguez. I forget the name of the third female lead. The basic gist of this movie, it's directed by Steve McQueen, who did 12 Years a Slave and Shame with Michael Fassbender. I can't say that I actually really like him as a director, to be totally honest mm-hmm. with you. And I actually feel like the content here could have been better in the hands of a more suitable director. I'll put it that way. Like, Ryan Coogler's version of this movie, by the way, like, would have been like, so I'm just thinking of like hot, like good, young, up and coming directors. And like Ryan Coogler's one, I think, would have just directed the heck out of this movie in a way that would have kept me on the edge of my seat, where Steve McQueen takes a more slower, methodical look mm-hmm. at it. To me, it was a little bit more on the boring side for a heist movie. With that being said, it's doing very well with the critics. Not as well with the audiences in terms of the box office. But it's got, it's got Colin Farrell's also in it. It's got Liam Neeson. It's got...
pretty good. It's a strong cast.
John Bernthal's in it. Yeah, no, yeah, it's yeah. There's a lot of people in it. From Atlanta, what's his name? Brian Tyree Henry, who mm-hmm. is... he's excellent in the movie. Overall, I will say it's a hit, not a miss. But it's kind of not everyone's gonna love this movie. But if you enjoy heist movie, it's worth checking out. I will say I will say a hit on Netflix. Check it out on Netflix. It's not worth a full movie, like a cost of a full movie ticket.
The how's the formula? Like, is it just like paint by numbers, or does it bust out of the formulaic?
No, I would say bust out of the formula
constraints.
I would say bust out of the formula constraints. It's not paint by numbers, and so I would give him that. It is not paint by numbers.
Good.
I just wish it was more interesting, right? If you were going to break out of the formula, like, not always breaking out of the formula yields good results, right? There's formulas for a reason, right? Because it's worked previously, right?
Exactly.
And so he breaks out of it. I wish that he would have done something more interesting, but it's fine. It's not like actively bad or anything like that.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it's
one. Yeah, I'll watch that. I mean, I'm into any heist movie, I've seen so many bad ones.
Yeah.
Even the what was the one that came out this year I can't even think of the.
Now You See Me Too.
With Daniel Radcliffe. Now You See Me Too is a great one. give me 1 second here. What is the guy's name that I'm so blanking on it? He was Gerard Butler. Gerard Butler was in a heist movie.
Oh yes,
that I watched on a plane
with Ice Cube.
Ice Cube Jr.
Crushed Ice, but yeah, Ice Cube.
It is Den of Thieves.
Den of Thieves. Oh, what a good! I love that title so much.
Den of Thieves. And here's the best thing: I just brought up his IMDb. There's a Den of Thieves 2 in pre-production.
Yeah. Oh, of course there is. Why not? Did it make money? It probably made money.
Oh, it had to have made money. I mean, so that is like the definition of formulaic. Everything about that movie has been done before 100 times. Mm. But I still watched it. I still felt for a movie that I watched on a plane, it kept my interest for the entire run. So
good. That's good. Gerard Butler, he lost his house.
I did see those pictures online.
Yeah. Yeah. Fire got it.
Yeah, sure did.
He'll be fine, I think.
he's gonna be more than fine. I guess that's why he's making Den of Thieves too. He's gotta pay that fire insurance deductible.
Den of Thieves 2, colon house money. shouldn't laugh at anyone who gets their house burned down, no matter how rich they are. But
are we sure that was his house, though? I mean, it would be pretty funny if he was taking that in front of his neighbor's house.
I would love a headline, a TMZ headline that's like, not like Gerard Butler takes selfie in front of burned down home, not his own. You know,
it was an Airbnb. he took a photo in front of an Airbnb that burned down.
His assistant's home.
So, yeah, it wasn't even in the fire zone. It was just
it was a selfie from like 2004. So I had dinner the other evening with some family in the Bay Area. This is like a yearly, you know, Black Friday dinner that we do, and it was with cousins and aunt and uncle, and they know I love movies. They love movies. And they actually asked me point blank. They were asking me, what should we see? You know, we're going to see a movie tomorrow night. We need your recommendation. There's all these movies. It should be this or should it be that? And as I was considering that, my cousin Chloe was like, oh, also, what did you think of the new Robin Hood? And it was funny because, you know, she assumed that I had seen it, which is a pretty good assumption considering the movies I just rifled off. Like, I've seen a lot of movies, except I had not seen that one. And it was just funny. It was the first one that she directly asked me, like, oh, yeah, what'd you think of Robin Hood? And I was like, oh, I haven't seen it. Like, I haven't seen Robin Hood. It's one of the – of all the movies you could have asked me, like, I actually haven't seen Robin Hood. And she told me how excited she is to see it because of Taron Egerton from Kingsman and Eddie the Eagle and, you know, and – I promised her what you and I have talked about. We are going to do a pod where we rank the Robin Hood films. That includes Robin Hood Prince of Thieves with Kevin Costner. That includes the recent Robin Hood movie with Russell Crowe. It includes Cary Elwes and Robin Hood Men in Tights. And it absolutely includes Disney's animated film from the 1970s with the Fox Robin Hood. Okay, we are going to be talking about those. We're going to be breaking those down and we will be ranking those. So that was just a quick aside.
So yeah. She better tune in for that one.
Oh, Chloe, who has not listened to a single episode of this podcast. And I don't blame her.
That'll be the one, though. Please, Chloe, listen to that episode.
I will send to her directly.
Because no one else wants to hear us break down the Robin Hoods, except for Chloe.
Chloe Stauffer. Anyway, but when to answer their question, though, what should we go see? I had to really consider it because Creed 2, Ralph... I knew not to, you know, A Private War probably wasn't going to be the one to recommend. And I told them, Green Book. Go see Green Book. Green Book is a movie that I went to with my parents. I took them to, I thought, judging by the trailers, this would be right up my parents' alley. To be honest with you, the trailers made me think like, oh boy, is this going to be a little much, you know? I went and saw it with my parents. And I will tell you, my parents haven't stopped talking about it. Okay. They were telling my siblings about how much. I mean, I called each one of them to tell them how much they liked it. As soon as the credits rolled, my mom turned to me and was like, "That was awesome!" Like she was so excited. And you know, I'll tell you, it wasn't just their enthusiasm, but like I found myself enjoying myself throughout this movie. Like there is a charm to this movie, which is 100% feel good, 100% family. You know, a holiday family fare. But it's done, and I just think it's executed on a level that was like, it was undeniable. The chemistry between Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali, and I guess I'll just give a quick rundown for those who haven't seen the trailer. This film takes place in the early 1960s, where Viggo Mortensen, who's putting on the Italian accent real thick, plays, The Lip.
Tony Lip.
There's no the. So Tony Lip is tasked with driving this musician and academic. This guy who has a doctorate, Dr. Shirley. He's a very educated, very smart man. But he's a black musician who's touring in the South. And he needs a driver/bodyguard for 2 months, you know, leading up to, you know, to Christmas Day. To take him to each one of his concerts and make sure that he doesn't get into trouble, right? People don't give him trouble. And so that's kind of the conceit of the film. And it is, I just think for me, it's like the perfect movie to recommend that, for friends to go take their parents to. I literally told you to do it, to do that exact thing, and you did. So I want to know, what did you think of it? What did your mom and her husband think of it?
Yeah, so after getting your recommendation, I knew, like, we had to drive out to, my wife and I had to drive out to take my mom to this movie, because it's, like you said, it's the perfect holiday family picture.
Yeah.
You know, I was skeptical going into it because, like you said, if you watch the trailer, it looks, you know, it looks, again, formulaic. It's the buddy, out of water buddy movie, road trip movie.
Yep.
You know, the heads butt because one guy is from this world and then the other guy is from this other world. And it's, you know, you think that it's going to play out a certain way. And spoiler alert, it does play out how you expect it to.
Yeah.
But the fun is the journey. And that's what this movie is all about.
Yeah.
It's all about experiencing what these two men from different worlds, what happens when they clash, and they both grow along the way. And this is it's exactly the type of movie that my mom loves. Mm-hmm. And it's the type of movies that we grew up watching together. This is a movie that could have easily have been made in the 80s or the 90s,
yeah,
probably even the 70s as well. So, yeah, any decade you could have seen a movie like this. And I think it would have been a hit. I don't think it's necessarily seeing the box office success that we hope for this year. But who knows? Maybe it'll have a life in video on demand later on.
Mm.
But just overall, like you said, it's just really enjoyable movie. It's, you know, some of the stuff is a little shallow as far as the how they tackle racism in this movie.
Sure.
Because it does deal with very powerful themes. It's all about racism and hatred and how people aren't accepted or weren't accepted in the South, specifically Black people. As you see from the doctor, he's an incredible pianist, incredible artist. And the way that he's treated along this journey, this concert tour of the South, is it's deplorable. And you get to see that the treatment at every stop, and the hurdles that he faces are it's really tragic to see. And I'm sure that stuff that wasn't even included, it was even worse. But that's the beauty of this movie, is it tackles these issues that are still present in today, these themes that we still wrestle with in America, and it gives us hope. And I think that at the end of the day, that's what we all want when we watch a movie like this, that's family friendly and upbeat. And yes, it does have a happy ending, but this story apparently really did have a happy ending. Tony's son was one of the screenwriters on this movie,
that's right,
which is great to hear that someone that was actually someone that grew up with is one of the characters, had an intimate knowledge of him, was actually present in the making of this film. Because some of the stuff that he says or the way that he's represented, it's hard to believe. And maybe it's, you know, it's played up for the camera, but mm-hmm. Viggo as this character, Tony, I mean, he's just incredible. He's he's so funny. He's so charismatic. And he just embodies the part. And I think that he did such a flawless job. I hope he gets nominated. Mahershala Ali is also flawless as his character.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I hope that he gets nominated as well. You brought up Bill Burr, the comedian, talking about the movie... you said it was the Front Runner.
Yeah,
Front Runner. So one of Tony's friends, one of his Goomba friends, and so Tony's friends and family are featured prominently in this movie. They're all Italian Americans, and they're all, you know, old school type of guys from the old neighborhood, from the Bronx, I think they were.
Yeah.
1960s Bronx. One of his friends is played by a comedian by the name of Sebastian Maniscalco. And he gets most of the screen time as one of his friends. He has some great lines in this. It's really funny. You can actually see, I haven't seen the screenplay, but I'm guessing a lot of his lines were riffed or, you know, basically improvised, because they're really funny and they're off the cuff. And I think that you get the honest reactions from the cast just because he's a really good comedian in real life. So
interesting.
That was a good bit of casting. Yeah, he played his friend Johnny Veneer.
Now, was he in the end scene where the family's having dinner? Was he there?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. He was in the end scene. He was basically in every scene. He got most of the FaceTime. Yeah.
So that's what's interesting about this movie. You talk about the humor and the comedy, and it's worth noting this is directed by Peter Farrelly, and who is known as one of the Farrelly brothers. So Peter and Bobby Farrelly, who are used to making movies together. This is the first time that they have not made the movie together. This is just Peter. These are the people who brought you Dumb and Dumber. There's Something About Mary. Me, Myself, and Irene. Okay? Stuck on You with Greg Kinnear and Matt Damon. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, they've only done these. Now, some of those are classics. Some of those are clunkers, right? But comedy is the only thing they've worked in. Now, this is decidedly not a comedy. This is a drama.
No.
But the movie is still very funny. And that, and I'm grateful that Peter Farrelly thought to include that in things like casting that, you know, that comedian as one of his Italian friends.
Yeah, I think you needed, so like I said, there's some powerful themes in this. And I think that you needed to break it up to tell this story.
Yeah.
Because they do, there's some big laughs in this movie and some really funny scenes and sequences.
Yes.
And I just think that it works really well together. And I think some of the best dramas that I've ever seen are also some of the funniest movies I've ever seen.
Oh, absolutely.
So that, now this is not, now keep in mind, this is not a great movie. It's just not. Technically, it's not a great movie. Style-wise, it's not a great, you have great performances, but as a movie as a whole, obviously not great. A little bit paint by numbers, but for what it is, what they're trying to accomplish here, I think they knocked it out of the park. And it's one of the most enjoyable movies I've seen this year by far.
Oh, yeah?
So I would recommend it to anyone that likes movies. Just go out and see Green Book.
Would you put it in your top 10 of the year so far?
So far, yeah. I think easily it's in my top 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. That's great. So there's this new feature here, by the way, that there's a live poll I can add in here.
All right.
I'm actually going to remove it right now because we have one viewer, and I don't think they're going to be
participating. It's definitely a bot.
So you said it is in your top 10?
It's in my top 10. Yeah, I think just all things considered. And, you know, my mom loved it, by the way. She was such a huge fan. And so you nailed it. It is it's a crowd pleaser. And I just saw on Rotten Tomatoes, the audience score is 94%.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
So the critic rating is 82%, which is pretty good,
That's all things considered. That's pretty
good. The audience score of 94% is just, that's a home run by any measure.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Go ahead and see it. It's a people pleaser. Fun for the holidays.
Just Natalie Chambers. Got a shout out. You didn't want to see what I'd vote for.
Calling you out. Very nice.
It. Actually, I want to throw the poll back on there, just so Natalie, we can know what Natalie votes for. I actually have no idea how this poll works. If people are able to interact with a video on Facebook,
let's figure it out on the fly.
I have no idea. But it allowed me to pick one of them as the designated or correct answer. The poll right now is what movie will you see? And it's Green Book, Ralph Wrecks the Internet, the front runner, and she picks Ralph Wrecks the Internet.
Yes, good call. Natalie got it.
Now we know the poll works. And then she writes hashtag mom life.
Yes.
Yeah, your kids are going to love it. There's no doubt about it, especially like the first Ralph movie. I mean, it's a very similar caliber of movie. And so I don't blame you for selecting it. We have added a second viewer. That person does not get to participate in the poll. Apologies. No.
Poll is closed.
Poll is
closed. This is Florida. We're Florida right now. No votes after the poll's closed. Sorry.
Ooh, political humor. Could use a little bit more of that in the front runner. tell you what.
Imagine if Peter Farrelly directed the front runner.
Oh, gosh. He would have made sure Hugh Jackman ditched the hairpiece right away. He's done plenty of hair humor from There's Something About Mary.
Can we talk about the performance of Mahershala Ali real quick in Green Book?
Yes, please. So I was going to ask you, I don't know if you've already touched on that enough, because you had texted me saying that both Viggo and Mahershala deserve to be nominated. But talk about Mahershala.
So Mahershala Ali, what's his biggest movie to date? I'm trying to think.
Only because it won, he got an Oscar for it. But
he was in Moonlight.
You mean like box office gross? What, like?
Yeah, I would say like what's his performance that he's most known for? It's probably House of Cards, right?
House of Cards. He was Remy Danton. Yeah,
Remy Danton.
Yeah, it's probably
probably that's the first place that I recognize him.
Oh yeah,
and he's got such a presence to him. It's really, really impressive to watch him perform. I think the skill set that he has is just, I mean, it's unparalleled basically with anyone, any sort of character actor that I've seen.
Yeah.
And he's so talented that he's broken out of that. And I think now he's a leading man.
Oh yeah.
He's, because he's so freaking talented. And you see it in this movie where he's playing this very peculiar kind of like aristocratic, classically trained pianist who just like lives his life based on his own rules and his own style. And I think that he's a very proper and fancy man. And Mahershala Ali captures that spirit that I think he brings him to life, even though I didn't really know the real person that it's based off of. But everything about his performance seems authentic and it seems believable. And I don't think that they could have cast a better actor to play this character.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Doctor, what's his name? Dr. Shirley. Something.
Yeah, Shirley.
Yes, Dr. Shirley, exactly.
I really do think he's the very best person to have played this part. Like, I don't think there's a better actor. I really don't.
There's so many scenes where his acting ability just really shines. It takes it to the next level where, like I said, a lot of this stuff is by the numbers and you figure out what's coming next. But because Mahershala Ali is so talented and so skillful, you feel pain for this character. Yeah. You have these emotions that are driven based solely off his performance, because the words are pretty mundane. But the pain that he has in his eyes, the way that he delivers the lines, just the way he carries himself is so powerful.
Yeah,
that I think he's one of the best actors alive right now. My money.
So good. I mean, there's this, and I don't think this is too much of a spoiler or get too much into plot, but I mean, the character is very interesting because, he's not someone that comes from the traditional, I guess, like black experience in America in terms of like in that era and like the industry that is in his social circles, in New York. But in the South, it's what's interesting is that, Viggo Mortensen's character, who at the beginning is giving him crap for not identifying with things that are more stereotypical parts of black culture. And yet he can't participate in anything that's regarded as white culture in the South because he can't even sit in a restaurant, where it's like whites only and whatnot. And it builds to the sequence where he says, if I'm not white enough and I'm not black enough, tell me, what am I? And it's like, that scene is like, I mean, it's in the trailer if you watch it, but building up to that, it is Mahershala is on fire. Like, just the delivery of it, the pain, the fit, like, you realize that there's probably some personal experience going into it or something, because it is so raw and so real that it adds what could have easily been a buddy road trip, paint by numbers, kind of just a very mediocre medium movie. It brings it to this next level of like, oh no, this is very good. Like, this is what we're seeing is actually really good.
It's moving, and I think it's truly difficult for an actor today, when I watch them, to move me. I think I'm more moved by words or images, but I think specifically in this movie, his performance moved me, and it made me feel like I was experiencing what the doctor was experiencing. And I hate that they included that line in the trailer.
I know.
Because it's such a great line. It's such a great sequence.
Yeah.
And I wish that we were surprised by it.
I know.
But even saying that, when it comes up, it's still moving. It's still incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
And all that is Mahershala. Like, that's his full talent on display. So I'd love to see him get nominated. He deserves it.
Oh, it'd be incredible. Oh, yeah. More people need to see this movie. And I think that's why I wanted to focus on it so much, and why I'm talking about it is like, people, you need to go see Green Book. Take your parents, okay?
Yeah, this is a movie where I feel like it's definitely going to have a life in cable and in video on demand and DVD. And I think most people are going to discover it there, unfortunately, because it's just not getting the box office play. I could totally see myself throwing this movie on when it's on cable and just like having it play, like maybe watching it once every other week.
Totally.
It feels like that type of movie.
There's great scenes.
It's so rewatchable.
I mean, it's a very rewatchable movie. And I could see myself channel surfing and being like, I got to hold on for this scene's coming up, or this scene.
Yeah, exactly. It's the fried chicken scene again. Again, they spoiled in the trailer, and I really wish they hadn't.
Did they?
Yeah, it's in the trailer.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, well.
One of them. Yeah, one of the scenes is, unfortunately.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
So
don't watch the trailer. Just go watch the movie.
The movie. It's rare for me. Like, I talk about a film like A Private War, okay, that I love. But there's also this part of me that knows, like, I can't really recommend that movie to certain types of people that I know just won't love it like I love it. And I don't want them to waste their money in a movie that I don't, you know. Like, there's just a very specific audience that I think will really find value in seeing that movie. Where Green Book is one of those really rare movies where I unreservedly can recommend it to people, to their families, I keep saying to their parents. Like, and I'm so confident that they're going to have a good time. I'm just so confident that they're just,
yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, the chance of them walking out being like, that was terrible, or, you know, it's just so low. And it's rare. And it's just across the board. I mean, whether you're from film snobs to people who just want to watch popcorn movies, I'm totally, totally comfortable recommending.
Wholeheartedly. Yeah, I think of all the criticisms I've read about the movie, is the harshest critique that I've heard about it is that it's pretty standard. Like, it's the standard buddy movie.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's not that the movie is bad. It's just that it's predictable.
Right.
But then universally, I see them praise Viggo and Mahershala Ali at the very least, because those two were doing such great work.
Oh, and their chemistry is just electric in this movie. It's actually really good. It's
amazing.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Especially with all the pounds that Viggo had to put on. I alluded to this at the beginning, I think, before we officially started here, but my dad was like, he told me he was watching, being like, oh, that looks like Aragorn from Lord of the Rings, but like, can't be, because this guy is huge in the movie, you know? Like, he's very round, very rotund, and you know, Isildur's heir is, you know, much more fit and muscular. But little did my dad know that Isildur's heir was a kind of a chauffeur in the 1960s. Anyway.
I will say my favorite meal that he eats in the movie is taking a large pizza and folding it in half.
Oh, dude, it was amazing. Was he sitting in like the motel room too or something?
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to remember. He's in his bed.
He's sitting in his
folds
bed.
Folds a pepperoni pizza in half.
An entire pepperoni pizza, folds it in half and starts eating. It's incredible.
Yeah.
I wonder if Viggo knew they were filming when that was happening.
He absolutely didn't.
Well, there's our run of movies, man. I guess before we go, do you want to go through the schedule of what's coming up and what we're going to be covering?
Sure. Yeah. The
holiday movie December, season.
It is. We are in the holiday movie season, and December is it's the end of that. So, because as you know, January is like the Death Valley, January and February.
Yeah.
So coming up in December, we have the movie Mortal Engines, which is Peter Jackson sci-fi thing. Mm-hmm. We have Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which is the cartoon Spider-Man with all the different multi-Spider-Mans. We have The Mule with Clint Eastwood.
Mm. Pecan Farmer.
Pecan Farmer. I think I'm going to be skipping all three of those.
Okay.
But then it really heats up on December 19th, which is Mary Poppins Returns.
Ooh.
She drops on December 19th.
Stop her family.
I know you'll be seeing that one.
No, yeah, we're huge Emily Blunt fans. We will be there.
I'll be there for Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Uh-huh. And then
Do you think he raps his way through the songs, by the way? Do you think he's going to rap? Like, I would love it if he takes the original Mary Poppins soundtrack, like Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, and actually flips it on its head and does the Hamilton-style hip-hop approach.
You know that's happening, right? You understand that's happening, right? There's no way that's not happening.
It has to.
It's going to happen. And I will be cringing all the way for every bar.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
On Friday the 21st, we have Aquaman.
Oh, Jason Momoa. Now, look, you were telling me that was tracking good. Where I look at that trailer and what I see is a $250 million movie that pulls in like $30 million in its opening weekend. I think it's going to bomb, and it's going to bomb hard.
I think that the trailer is embarrassing. It's one of my least favorite trailers that I've seen this year, but it's going to make so much money.
Well,
and it's going to make $1 billion in China.
His love interest is literally a red-haired mermaid. It's Ariel from Little Mermaid. Like, I was like, you couldn't.
That's why I'm going to see it. Also on the 21st, we have we have Sandra Bullock's Bird Box, which is the one where have you seen that trailer?
No.
Sandra Bullock and her kids, they wear blindfolds or something. I don't know. Go watch the trailer for Bird Box. It's pretty interesting.
Terrible name.
It's like a thriller.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a Netflix movie, actually.
Oh, okay.
And then we have Bumblebee, which is the Transformers
sequel,
with Haley Joel Osment.
Oh. Haley Joel Osment in Bumblebee?
Sure.
Okay.
Or is it a different Haley? I'm going to say it's Haley Joel Osment.
I don't think it's Haley Joel Osment. I don't know. I don't know for sure, but I don't know.
Haley Steinfeld.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Different, I think.
Similar Haleys.
We're from the...
That's on the 21st. And the first 21st, we also have Holmes and Watson.
Oh, gosh.
Which is...
Oh, my gosh.
Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly.
Have you seen the trailer of this?
Oh, I've seen it. It's not great.
Look, Talladega Nights and Step Brothers, classics. Okay? They're just bona fide classics.
Magic. Magical movie.
Look, this isn't a third time's a charm type of situation. It's Holmes and Watson. First off, we are oversaturated in the Sherlock Holmes category. Okay, we've had three different, like, very recent iterations of this. Three different ones.
Are any of them good?
Well, yeah, the BBC one. The BBC one with Benedict Cumberbatch. Right?
It's but one I haven't seen.
Robert Downey Jr. one's not good. The Ian McKellen one where he plays an aged Sherlock Holmes, not good. Very, very boring movie, to be honest with you. Very, very boring. I fell asleep in the theater for about an hour and 30 minutes of it. And yeah, it's longer than that. And then now we have this fourth iteration where in the trailer you have John C. Reilly literally take the photograph as a selfie, and he goes, it's something like a self photograph, and he takes a selfie with the Queen of England with the equipment, like the old timey like photo equipment, and it's a selfie joke that John C. Reilly, who is one of the funniest people on the planet, one of the most talented actors on the planet, is forced to read this garbage. Like, who's directing this movie? Like, who's
Let's see, let me check real quick.
Is it it's anyone of note?
I don't think it is.
It just makes me mad. It just makes me mad.
It's terrible.
Is it a Coen Brothers film?
Oh, it's Ethan Coen.
Ethan Coen. Not to be confused with Joel and Ethan Coen.
No.
Ethan Coen is the guy who did Garfield and legally changed his name to Ethan so he could get actors to agree to do his films because he thought that by tricking people into thinking they were doing a Coen Brothers film, you know, he'd be able to make movies with get him under contract, basically. And so that's what he clearly did here with Will Ferrell. Bill Murray fell for it, and poor John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell fell for it here.
Terrible.
It looks terrible.
Yeah, I'll be skipping that one. Speaking and then also of, on speaking the 21st, we have...
Coen Brothers, sorry, really quick. Did you watch The Ballad of Buster Scruggs that came out on Netflix?
I haven't started it yet, but it's in my queue.
Watch it, and we're going to do a pod on it. So what's next in the
very good
list there?
I will be watching that one.
Okay.
Second Act starring Jennifer Lopez.
Okay.
And Welcome to Marwen, which is Steve Carell playing with dolls.
Which one are you more likely to see? Welcome to Marwen or the Holmes
one? Man, that is... Ooh. Am I forced to watch one of them?
Yeah. We won't do a pod on either, but yeah.
I'm watching Holmes and Watson.
Yeah, it's got to be.
No, I'm not sitting through Steve Carell.
I'm not sitting through Welcome to Marwen. I'm not doing it.
I can't sit through the trailer. I've seen the trailer a dozen times, and I hate it every single time.
So it played twice in the six movies that I saw over the weekend. It played twice. The second time, I actually walked out. I walked out and was like, I'm using the bathroom break. I didn't need to go to the bathroom, but I actually couldn't sit. It was so hard. There's a courtroom scene with Steve Carell. He's like, I have my friends, and he's got these dolls that are his friends, and it's just so hard to watch because Steve Carell's a talented person, very funny person. He's the primary reason that The Office is way better than Parks and Rec, and here he is making a fool of himself.
It's bad. Yeah. It's really bad. Yeah. From the visionary director of Forrest Gump.
Gosh,
is what the trailer
Zemeckis
says.
He did Back to the Future. This is Zemeckis. Yeah. It should have been from the visionary director of The Walk.
I'm out on Welcome to Marwen.
Yeah.
But most importantly, the one movie that I'm looking forward to the most before the end of the year is opens Friday, December 21st. It is the movie Vice.
Starring
Christian Bale, Amy Adams, Steve Carell, Sam Rockwell.
Oh, Sam Rockwell.
Directed by Adam McKay.
I will say this trailer played in Green Book. This was probably the one bad part of my father's experience in the movie was when this trailer came up. He goes, oh, of course. Oh, great. And I'm like, I look at him and my dad's just very vocally like, oh, okay. Yeah. Hollywood is going to tell this story. I'm sure they'll get it right. You know? And you know, I, to his point, it looks like Adam McKay is taking a decidedly liberal angle. Now, that liberal angle might be the truthful angle. We'll see when it comes out. But I actually probed my dad about it yesterday. Like, I wanted to, or not yesterday, sorry, after the movie. Because I wanted to know, like, is my dad going to defend Cheney? You know, because I feel like it's, you know, I don't think you have to, it's not a hardened liberal or, you know, like even, the, I should say the most hardened conservative could look at what Cheney did and was like, oh yeah, it's probably not a great vice president, like not a great vice president, right? And then I asked my dad after, he goes, oh yeah, no, Cheney wasn't good at all, you know? But I think it was just the idea that liberal Hollywood's taking on a conservative administration and he just takes umbrage with it, which, you know, it does alienate like 50% of the potential audience for Adam McKay, but
yeah, it sure does. But I think if there's one universal villain, it's Dick Cheney. Yeah. I think that everyone can accept that this is an evil man who made some terrible decisions. For very bad reasons while he was in power.
Yes, he did.
So, but I'm looking forward to that, to seeing that.
It looks
one.
Really good. It looks really good.
It looks awesome. And then also, there's one movie that opens limited release on Christmas Day. It is Barry Jenkins' If Beale Street Could Talk.
That's on Christmas Day. Oh, so they're getting it in before. Oh, so for Oscar consideration.
For Oscar consideration. Barry Jenkins was the director of Moonlight.
Yes.
Which won Best Picture last year.
Legendary.
He won the Oscar for adapted screenwriting. Yeah, exactly. La La Land. Barry Jenkins directed First Man.
You know what's funny is I talked about going to eat with my cousins and aunts and uncles. My cousin's husband, he went off about how much he was disappointed by First Man, bored he was by it. He's like, it was so boring. And he loved La La Land, loved Whiplash. And he was just so bored. He said he was really let down by it, which I thought was really fascinating. I'm hearing more and more people that are let down by it, which is really interesting.
Yeah, I think it's a very disappointing movie.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's crazy that we have zero buzz about that movie. It only came out like last month, I think.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
It's pretty sad.
But
go check out the trailer If Beale Street Could Talk. It looks pretty interesting. Yeah. Barry Jenkins, we know, is a super talented guy.
Yes.
The movie looks visually stunning because that's what he does best. Hopefully it's a good movie. The trailer doesn't leave me particularly optimistic, but it could be a good movie. I don't know.
Could be. We'll see.
Yeah. That's what's coming up in December.
All right. Well, good. Looking forward to it.
Looking forward to the mule.
The mule. I will be seeing the mule.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm watching Narcos Mexico right now on Netflix, and I just feel like the mule just goes right in with the, I mean, it's just.
Oh, yeah. It's perfect.
Yeah. That's going to just transition right to the next piece of drug content.
How do we think that Clint Eastwood felt about the caravan? Do we?
Well, he's part of it now.
Yeah, exactly. How do you think that his character or he would react to his character in real life, like if he came across a mule that was doing this stuff?
Oh my gosh, I would love to see him do a bit like the empty chair bit, except that there's an empty Dodge Caravan on the stage, and he speaks to the caravan. I would watch 30 minutes of content of that alone. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. You kidding me? The caravan. I want to watch that movie about how that became theater. My goodness. A lot of things I want to say. I'm withholding right now, but
that's for the post pod wrap.
That's post pod. So, anything else?
No, I think that just about hits it. I think if you're near a theater that's playing Green Book, go out and watch it. You're going to enjoy it.
Yes.
If you don't like the movie, let us know and we'll refund your ticket.
Yes.
No, we won't.
Yeah, we will not. We will not. That's no. We will, but we won't.
No, we won't.
So coming up, we will be bringing on Shannon to talk Fantastic Beasts and the Crimes of Johnny Depp, and we will be also ranking the Robin Hood movies. So those are two promised future ones. And so the fact
and
that
the Ballad of what's his name?
Oh, Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Yes,
which we have to talk about. I know we've done a pod in the long past where we ranked the Coen Brothers films. Honestly, we could probably do that ranking again, and my rank changes. But I'm eager to talk about Buster Scruggs with you, actually.
If we do another one, we have to leave out Ethan Coen.
Yes, no, we're not.
He's getting left off.
We're not
off
ranking, because last time that was our mistake, was three of your top five were Ethan Coen movies.
My number one was Garfield, so yeah, I blew it.
Oh, it's a heck of a movie. All right, man. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we will be back with that more content. All right. Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.